This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, January 7th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News, and we'll have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, a remarkably warm one. But first, a look at today's news. Illinois U.S. Senator Barack Obama won the Iowa caucuses among Democrats last week, but there's already another big test for the candidates coming up. Jenna Dooley has more.
Now that Iowans have had their say, voters in New Hampshire will make their presidential picks. Barack Obama took the majority of votes during the Iowa caucuses, but it's a clean slate for the candidates in New Hampshire's primary. Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin has supported Obama during his campaign and joined him for the Iowa caucuses. Durbin says a certain group of voters may help Obama during this primary.
We believe the difference in New Hampshire will be the independent voters who make up their mind at the end whether to participate and which party to join. And we think that they're going to be attracted to the candidacy of Barack Obama.
Durbin plans to spend the remainder of his recess from Congress on the campaign trail with Obama. I'm Jenna Dooley.
Just before the New Hampshire primary, Obama has zoomed to a 13 percentage point lead over Hillary Clinton. Each candidate has 32% in a comparable mid-December poll. The latest poll of New Hampshire voters for USA Today and Gallup was conducted after Obama's victory in Thursday's Iowa caucuses. Clinton placed third in the Iowa caucuses. The runner-up in Iowa, John Edwards, trailed Obama by 22 percentage points. The poll was conducted Friday through yesterday. The survey of 778 likely Democratic voters had a margin of sampling error of plus or minus 4 percentage points. Illinois' earlier primary election is designed to help Democrat Barack Obama's presidential bid, but one analyst says the state's Republican voters could play an even larger role in helping decide that party's nominee. Sean Crawford has more.
Obama is the favorite to win Illinois' Democratic primary February 5th, but it appears to be more open on the Republican side. As a populous state, Illinois has a large number of delegates at stake. U of I Springfield professor Ken Redfield says that makes Illinois attractive to the GOP candidates. He expects by the time the state's voters go to the polls, at least four candidates, Mike Huckabee, Mitt Romney, John McCain, and Rudy Giuliani, will still be in the mix.
And we're likely in Illinois to see a lot of that campaign if it really is a wide open four-way race. If we still have all four of those people are still viable by the time we get to the Illinois primary.
That means voters could attend campaign stops and hear more stump speeches to help them better make up their minds about who to support. The downside, possibly being inundated with campaign ads. Redfield says suburban Republicans, who are often more moderate, could decide the state's primary. He says that could favor someone like Giuliani. I'm Sean Crawford.
In Indiana, party caucuses and paperwork deadlines have created a confusing blueprint for political leaders trying to pick a successor to U.S. Representative Julia Carson. A special election will be held to elect someone to fill out the rest of Carson's term, which runs through 2008. She died December 15th. Then a primary will be held in May for candidates for the 7th Congressional District seat. Democrats will caucus Saturday to determine their nominee for the special election. They will then gather again on February 16th to choose a slate of candidates for the May primary. Republicans will hold their caucus January 13th. They'll start by selecting their preferred candidate for the seat in the primary. Then they'll pick a nominee for this special election. A Champaign man is expected to make his first court appearance today in connection with a fatal shooting at the city's American Legion late last month. 24-year-old Charmel Brown was arrested Friday night. He's being held on $1 million bond in the Champaign County Jail for the alleged murder of 29-year-old Tyrone Greer. On the evening of December 30th, police responded to a report of a shooting at the Legion Hall at 704 North Hickory. Two others were wounded and were hospitalized for treatment. Champaign police detectives still hope to speak with everyone who was at the American Legion that night. Anyone with additional information on this incident is urged to contact Champaign police or Crime Stoppers at 373-TIPS. Copper thieves have made off with the wires that signal warning lights and lower gates at Will County Railroad crossings, and officials say the thefts could increase the chances of a deadly collision. The wires above Union Pacific Railroad crossings in Wilmington have been stolen three times in the past 2 weeks. Wilmington Police Deputy Chief Mike Boyle says an alarm sounds when the wires aren't working, but a train has to pass through first. Mark Davis is a spokesman for the Union Pacific Railroad. He says the thefts were reported twice last Sunday and once Tuesday. He says it's a very dangerous theft because thieves don't know if the wires are high voltage or not. Wilmington is about 50 miles south of Chicago. The case surrounding the controversial opening of Aurora's Planned Parenthood continues tonight when the city's Zoning Board of Appeals will meet. Tony Arnold explains what's on the schedule.
A variety of issues could come up in the hearing. At its core, an anti-abortion group is challenging the way the Planned Parenthood opened. Over the summer, the clinic used a front company to get its permits, partly to avoid protests. Tonight, the city of Aurora will try to get the board to dismiss the case entirely. The Zoning Board of Appeals may also hear attorneys for the anti-abortion group argue for subpoenas of some city officials and zoning experts. A third issue could also come up. The Planned Parenthood is currently operating on a temporary certificate of occupancy. Attorneys for the anti-abortion group say that certificate is invalid. I'm Tony Arnold.
The City of Chicago's Office of the Inspector General is currently investigating one of its own investigators. Chicago police say Tracy Buckley, an assistant chief investigator for Inspector General David Hoffman, was arrested over the weekend on shoplifting charges. Officers say Buckley, who earns about $70,000 a year, was allegedly caught walking out with unpaid grocery items from a Whole Foods market on the city's northwest side. Hoffman has placed Buckley on administrative leave, but he says he wouldn't be surprised if it turned out the allegations against her were a mistake. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.illinois.edu. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bosser. Some say that it's a dog's life, and that statement has even greater meaning when it comes to wills and trusts and the way the law looks at beneficiaries. Here's commentator Amy Guida with this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
As I write this, my English bulldog is at my side, looking up at me soulfully. He turns away only to hold his jowl open against a chair in order to breathe better. I know that his attentiveness likely has much to do with the fact that I'm sitting near a nice warm fire. I like my dog a lot, but no matter how soulful his look, he and his predecessors won't get a sizable amount of money from me when I'm gone. I have my kids and other relatives to worry about. Besides, it's hard for me to understand why people would leave any sizable inheritance to a dog or a cat or a whatever pet. There are so many people and worthwhile organizations in need. There are also willing heirs waiting in the wings, perhaps. They're usually the ones who come forward to complain when a loved one wills a fortune not to grandnephew Dylan, but to Great Dane Duke. The latest attention-grabbing headline: Maryland dogs live the sweet life on $800,000 inheritance. I'm not saying that there's any lawsuit pending in that case or that one will ever be filed, but it's that sort of situation that could spark relatives to come out of the woodwork. Sometimes it's a non-issue because the dogs are older and won't live so long and the relatives will benefit when the dog dies, or because the relatives are the primary beneficiaries with the dog or cat receiving only a portion of the estate. But sometimes a relative gets nothing, and the dog or cat gets much more than that. Think Leona Helmsley's $12 million gift to her dog, and how, they say, two of her grandchildren got nothing. Sometimes when that happens, those left out ask the courts to figure out whether the will is a good one or not, hoping for the latter. Many of the cases are older. Courts reasoned back then that pets were property only, and one couldn't bequeath items of personal property to other items of personal property. The tale of Roxy, apparently in Airedale, is a good example of how things used to be. Roxy didn't get half of her owner's fortune, even though that's what she'd been promised in her owner's will. The court found that dogs couldn't be beneficiaries, and Roxy's half went to the decedent's human relatives. Compare that outcome with a similar case in which the court upheld a will that gave all monies to an animal protection organization. Perfectly okay, the court said, because the money didn't go to one particular dog, but an organization that helps dogs. That second outcome is similar to what would happen in many cases today. Take the example of an Ohio woman who died a few years back and left all her money to the local Humane Society, asking that it care for her cat. Relatives argued that once the cat died, the leftover cash should go to them, But a jury and an appellate court decided in favor of the Humane Society, certain that the pet owner had intended to disinherit family. What this means is that it's likely that a court would find a pet the rightful owner of a fortune, even if surviving relatives object, as long as the jurisdiction allows it and all legal ducks are in a row. Who would have thought that a fluffy cat or even a smash-faced dog could hold their own in court? Come to think of it, maybe there's a motive for soulful bulldog looks in my direction, quite aside from fireside warmth. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. Today's forecast calls for mostly cloudy, windy, and unseasonably mild conditions, with a few brief showers during the morning, occasional showers, and perhaps a thunderstorm passing by this afternoon. The high, 66, that's breaking the old record of 63, established back in 1907, will have wind from the south up to 28 miles per hour, some gusts over 30. Tonight, cloudy, windy, and mild, periods of rain, and a chance of thunderstorms, the low 53 degrees, winds up to 25 miles per hour and gusty. Cloudy tomorrow, a period of rain and perhaps some thunderstorms, the high around 58 at midday, with the temperature slowly falling through the 50s and into the 40s during the afternoon, wind shifting from southerly to westerly at 15 to 25 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tomorrow evening, some showers during the evening, becoming partly cloudy overnight, the low 32. Wednesday, mostly sunny skies with a high of 45, increasing clouds Wednesday night with a low of 32. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, January 7th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wiol.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.